Hibbard comes home. The pitch swung on and missed. The throw to second is in time. It's a strikeout, throw him out.
Kick it out left corner. DeAndre wide open for three. He hit it again.
Raider going deep over the middle. Caught. Rucker across midfield, and he's going to take it all the way to the house. 79 yards.
Welcome to the Second to None podcast, the A-State podcast, presented by First National Bank and Cavanaugh Auto Group. Now, here's Matt Stoltz and Brad Bobo.
Coming up, baseball with a very encouraging weekend. Bowling competing in its 17th consecutive NCAA tournament. Another solid week for the track and field teams. Men's golf with another solid performance as well. But we're going to start with the big story of this past week. A press conference was held back on Friday to officially introduce the 18th head men's basketball coach in program history, and it's our pleasure to welcome him into the studio today. I want to welcome in Ryan Pannone. How you doing?
I'm doing well, living my dream, totally underwater, but all of the problems that I'm having are problems I prayed for. So very, 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 very fortunate and blessed to be here. You know, anytime you're taking over a program, you're immediately underwater with everything that you're learning, the new system, how does it work, how does the university work, filling out all your paperwork, meeting with everyone that you possibly can while recruiting, hitting the portal, putting together a roster, hiring a staff, and trying to respond to as many people as possible. That every day the amount of unread texts and missed phone calls grows and grows and grows.
Give me the number. You told me earlier.
Today it's going up. We are at 2,371.
So listen, I'm one of those.
That's the unread text messages.
I'm one of those about coming up and visiting with me during the baseball game last week. You can disregard that one.
Knock one off that number. I missed that one. That is one. No, my mom, she's like, oh, I text you. I was like, you text me. I don't even know. There's just so many that I don't know. And, like, you're spending all day, and you just don't have the time to respond because every phone call you return is, like, a 20-minute phone call. So if you return three, it takes up an hour. That also means, you know, you're not texting, you're not watching film, you're not meeting with people. And then I'm trying to really meet with people and sit down and build relationships, people from the community, the students, supporters, staff members. And I hate to be the guy that's just always looking at his phone throughout the meeting.
I know it wasn't enough time, but it was kind of interesting, and it was really nothing to do with you. It was part weather and part other people who had to be there scheduled. But you did get this kind of this weird, unusually large amount of time where you got to be here Monday, but you didn't have your press conference till Friday. So you did get 4 days to just go.
Which is an advantage because you get a real feel. Like I've been able to get a feel for the people in the city. When you're taking over an opportunity in a place that you've never been, okay, you could research it. You could hear it online. I've heard the way Josh Pierre has spoken about Arkansas State for 2 years and his love and feel for the city, the community, the people. And then obviously everything Coach Hodson said and felt about it. But you don't know. You just don't really know till you're there. For me, it was an advantage. I'm glad it happened that way because I got to get out. I got to be around. I got to feel the city. I got to feel the community, feel the people, hear what they're saying. Then to be able to do my press conference after, I'm really glad it worked out the way that it did because it allows you to speak more authentically with the situation and environment that you're in. And it also gives you that opportunity to communicate with recruits as well of like players that you're talking to of just how this feels. And, you know, one of the players I got a chance to sit with, and I said this in the press conference, you know, he just made the statement, just Jonesboro's, it's a peaceful place. And it's a great way to describe it.
I know you did your due diligence. You did plenty of research, heard a lot from Josh Pierre about Jonesboro and Arkansas State. So in just over a week of being here, what surprised you so far?
One, how nice the city is, because I wasn't really sure. You just don't know. And I think the city is really nice, especially for family. I mean, that was a big thing. We did our research. We knew it was pretty nice for family. They left out this whole mosquito thing in the interview. No one really told me that, but yeah. It's like everywhere I go, they're like, oh, you know, are you going to be ready for the mosquitoes? And
I don't think they talk about that on the Chamber of Commerce website either.
Didn't put it on the new Welcome to Jonesboro sign.
That is a fact. And so they just kind of sneak that in there once you're here and you sign your contract.
Wait a couple of months.
It's like, where'd you buy your house? Is it where you're going to die by mosquitoes or not? And it's like, you don't have to worry about crime at night here because the mosquitoes take care of it. And it's like, what is going on in this place? So that I didn't know. And then just how nice the people are. And so, I mean, it's like, you know, you get to go to some cities, and I've been all over the world, and whether it's visiting or living, and I've visited and lived in some countries that you don't feel welcomed in. Maybe it's just because you're an American in the Middle East or different situations for political reasons. To be in a place that people make you feel welcome is amazing. There are places that people go to that people don't really make them feel welcome. And I think when you have a wife and three little kids, that's super important. So not excited about the mosquitoes.
Yeah.
Very excited about, you know, the family atmosphere here in the city.
It's just interesting, you know, the difference in the opening from 2 years ago. If you're a basketball coach, the part that hadn't changed is there's only about 350 of those chairs open, period.
That's correct.
But now, you know, Jeff gets to go out with a place. You've won 45 games in 2 years. You just won a part of a conference championship. You led the league in attendance. It's not hard to find people that want to try that on for a little while and give it a go.
Absolutely. Brian came here and he crushed it. And his staff, T. Butters, Jamie Quarles, and Logan, and everyone else said he had a part of it. What they were able to build here in 2 years is amazing. And I mean, it's certainly a big part of the attraction. Like, it's sometimes you take a job and you feel the potential is there, right? Which is obviously how Brian felt, or he wouldn't have taken the job. I'm fortunate enough to come in after him and take a job, be like, it's proven the potential's there. It's not a question mark, is the potential there? I'm fortunate enough to step into a place where that has won 45 games. They've knocked off Power Five schools, put on a good showing in terms of style of play that players know and coaches know more about Arkansas State. So the path that I have stepping into it, because of the foundation that Coach Hodgson and his staff built here, I'm very, very, very fortunate because it is a highly coveted job. Being able to follow them is a great opportunity.
We've heard all these great things, and your story is amazing, and we're going to be able to get to know you much more in the coming months, and we could go on and on about your stories and hear about it all. But you've coached on the high school level, the AAU level, G League, overseas in places like China, Germany, Israel, Korea, Slovakia. We've heard things like you're an elite offensive mind. That's big. But I knew you were a smart guy when you got up on that podium last Friday and you gave all the credit to your wife, helping you get to the spot you are now. And you and I were talking about it before we started recording, just everything she's done to get you to this point.
Oh, I am not a functioning adult. I am a massive man, baby. I'm so fortunate I have my wife. I wouldn't be where I'm at. It's impossible to be where I'm at without, one, the sacrifices that my wife has made, but then two, she takes everything off my plate. My daily life is my family, my faith, food, basketball. Anything outside of that, I don't have a whole lot of responsibilities for. And it's like anything that has, we're buying a house, Paybrook handles all of it. Like, I don't, she tells me where to go, what to do. Do I like it? Do I not like it? She handles everything else. It has to do with it paying a bill. She handles every possible thing that I can just focus on doing my job. She drives everywhere. I cut film. I drive nowhere. So it's amazing. You know, she just takes it off my plate. I mean, I'm super, super fortunate to have her and to have a partner that is as invested. And, you know, she does all these things that aren't fun. So I can focus on work.
We've heard, and it's funny, we heard one of the stories is that if you get out somewhere to get in the car, the question is, how long's the drive? Because is it long enough to watch film? Now, we had a different version of it last week. You and I took a very, very short drive together, and it was enough time to sneak in one recruiting phone call. Eventually, that'll give way to film. But a lot of people love basketball, but never going to get called a junkie like you. Like, how did you get there? What made you a basketball junkie?
I think it's the same way in every field, right? whether you're a coach, and oftentimes it's thought about more so with players and movie stars and people in the entertainment industry, but it's in every field of work. You have people that are incredibly talented, right? So there's just some sportscasters that are incredibly gifted, incredibly talented. There are coaches that are just incredibly talented. They just get it. It just clicks. They know what it is. You know, LeBron is an incredibly talented player. And I was not a super talented coach. And it's like I tell players all the time, if a individual is more talented than you and they work harder than you, how can you ever be better than them? But if someone's more talented than you, you can outwork them in every aspect, in every way of every day. You have a chance to catch up to them. And so my whole career, I wasn't very talented as a coach, but I wanted to be the best. Also in every field, you have talented individuals that are lazy. And so my whole mentality within my career was I'm just going to outwork everyone. While they're out golfing, I'm going to study film. While they're watching the Super Bowl, I'm going to watch film. While they're going out, I'm going to watch film. I'm going to outwork every single person in every aspect of every way to become as good of a coach as I possibly can without sacrificing or risking divorce or being a terrible father in that aspect. And so that's where my wife comes in, because she takes everything off my plate that allows me to solely do those things. I eat food. I'm a father and husband. I do basketball. I go to church. That's it. Functioning psychopath. I got problems.
Why do you love basketball so much? What made you fall in love with the sport?
You know, I don't know why I fell in love with it to begin with. I know how I got into it. My stepfather got into it. My father was a very gifted athlete. He also worked incredibly hard at it. I mean, we're talking everything here. Ping pong, New York State champion yo-yo, bowling, pool, baseball. Played every sport except basketball. And my father had actually shaped me a lot as a coach. My father was very gifted and had incredible hand-eye coordination. And he was a professional in multiple of those sports, not good enough at any of them to make any money. And so when he was growing up, his father would tell him, you got smart people and stupid people, and you ain't smart, so you better figure this out in some sports if you want to make a living. And never took school serious, couldn't make a living at it, so he went into factory work and became a mailman and spent his whole life in the postal office mailman. Eventually, towards the end, he worked his way up to postal supervisor. And because he was really gifted, he couldn't teach you how to do it. Like, he would show you and he would give you instruction. And then the moment you couldn't do it, it became frustrating for him because he could pick it up so well. I couldn't. He was just more gifted than I was. My sister was actually a very gifted athlete. She could just pick it up too. Like, she's by far the better athlete than I was. So all I would do, if I couldn't do it, I would get his frustration led to yelling. So I just quit all those sports. Well, the sport he didn't really play was basketball, which he'd just sit up in the stands and just yell anyways. But, you know, so I got to pick it up. It actually shaped me a lot as a coach of, like, how do you communicate and learn how to teach? Because at the end of the day, like, we see it all the time. Very gifted players become coaches, and they can't teach what made them gifted. They could just do it. And those things, like, really shaped me.
So I'm going to get skipped to Alabama here because I know – but. You know, Nate Oates, at least what most of us think, is, you know, a big part of the reason he got where he got is because of the way he plays offense. And so people forget that when Brian Hodgson got hired at Arkansas State, all three of his assistants got head coaching jobs. He reloaded. He brings you in and literally calls you the offensive coordinator of an offensive guy. I mean, so what were you able to do to come in and make an offensive guy's offense better?
Well, you know, number one, people look at Oates, and it's like Nate Oates, you could drop him in any league, any team, any situation, he will outperform expectations. It is not by chance or luck that Nate Oates wins. He will win wherever he goes. Two main reasons for that. One, he's incredibly intelligent, incredible work ethic at being great at what he does. Two, no ego. So all Nate Oates looks for is the people that are best at their job. He wants to hire the best person for their job. And then he's open to anything that helps a team win. And so Coach and I, he's brilliant. Very similar offensive philosophies. And I've been able to sports specialize a little bit more towards like focus more on offense within the NBA because offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators are more prevalent in the NBA. And obviously it came from football and it's trickled down to the NBA yeah. and everything that's in the NBA trickles down 10, 15 years later to college basketball. It takes a long time to get here. And so their offense was good. He wanted it to be better. And so we interviewed, and I gave some suggestions on, like, this is where I think the offense can take the next step. And I'm very fortunate that coach just kind of looks at situations, and he kind of give you a blank stare, and, like, he'll study on it and be like, yeah, let's do it. Like, he thinks through everything in his mind, and you can see the wheels turning, and he's so open to just finding a better way to do everything. Fortunately, the offense worked well, and we got better.
Get huge savings now at every Cavanaugh dealership. Cavanaugh has a great selection of late model, low mileage, certified pre-owned cars, trucks, and SUVs. And most are still under factory warranty. We have every make and every model, so you're sure to find the vehicle you want. And when you buy at Cavanaugh, every new and used purchase comes with 1 year of free maintenance. Plus, we buy cars.
Bring a vehicle, get a check.
Come see us today at one of our dealerships or go to CavanaughCars.com.
This is Coach Butch Jones, and we need you to help our A-State athletic programs by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that is making a real difference in the lives of our student-athletes. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team newsletters, special gear, and exclusive access that you will not find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at ImpactClub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T Club.com. Your support is greatly appreciated and is helping our programs right now. Wolves up.
Continuing to visit with A-State head men's basketball coach Ryan Pannone here on the Second to None podcast presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank, where they put you first always. You must have known early on, though, that you wanted to be a coach, and that's kind of indicative by your journey. So tell me how you got into coaching. You're 18 years old, right? Yep. A student at South Florida. You become an assistant at Oldsmar Christian School. Tell me yep. how an 18-year-old gets that opportunity.
So I finished playing there. I transferred there to play with my two best friends. Their father was our coach. He was like a father to me, and he owned his own business, a mortgage lending business. So I transferred there my senior year to play. After the year, we had some smaller college opportunities, the three of us, and he offered both of us a job, all three of us a job, to go work for him. One of the brothers went to Clearwater Christian to play, which is actually where my wife went and she played. Myself and the other brother, Bobby, we went to work full-time for him. And I probably messed up because the one that went to college became an incredibly successful lawyer. And the brother I went to work with, he ended up, I quit at 20, and that's when I went to South Florida. I didn't go to college right away. He ended up building his own business and Medicare, Medicaid insurance, and he sold it for a lot of money, and I'm here. But they're helping support, so it's good to have good friends. But once I was done playing, like, I loved the game, and it was like, how could I stay involved? So I just started coaching with him, and it was great because he let me do a lot at 18. I mean, like, I've graduated, I'm taking the team, and we're going to play in team camps, and I'm coaching. I just finished playing with these guys. I don't know what I'm doing. So I got to do all this work, run all these practices, because he would kind of show up the day before the game and do the practice before the game. And over that two-year period, I became consumed with making players better. So I felt like I was going to invest so much in their individual development, because, like, no one had really done that with us. And this is 2003. Like, player development wasn't a big deal. I just became obsessed with making players better. And then at 20, when I quit to go to South Florida, I had a dream. I was like, all right, I'm going to go be a manager at South Florida. This is like, I want to become a college coach. So I quit my job, went to go be a manager. Some circumstances happened that I actually became the head coach at Oldsmar Christian at 20. And I started working with a guy by the name of David Thorpe, who's really created the player development business and first person really trained players, NBA players for the draft, work with NBA players full time. And like, it was just an addictive personality that I was obsessed with it. All I wanted to do was basketball. At that time, I was just a psychopath, not functioning. You know, I learned how to function later in life.
We've honestly got to do another one of these just to get to all these spots. Games taking you all over the world. And honestly, kind of the last stop in this basketball journey was the college game. Like, are you surprised by that? By the time you had coached professional guys so long, do you just think you'll be a professional basketball coach?
I did, and so I really wanted to go back to being a head coach. I'd been a head coach for 9 years. The NBA is an amazing place, but there's only 30 jobs. You know, my path, I always try to reverse engineer everything. So, like, when I was trying to make the NBA, I was looking at it, it's like, how did these guys get there? Where did they come from? How do I get there? If you took a look at the NBA head coaches, there was about 7 guys that were former successful G League coaches. So you have a chance. You know, like, I had a potential chance to do that based off other people's success. I had thought about college. Could I get into the right situation with my background? If I had college experience, could I be an attractive candidate to an AD? But I wasn't really going to do it. Made the NBA. I was happy. It was a great life. I worked so hard to get there. And then Coach Oates lost all 3 assistants, and he called me up and wanted to talk to me about being an assistant for him. And he convinced me to took it, and a big part of it was the style of play, you know, something I was familiar with. I don't watch college basketball, really, unless we play you. I enjoy watching the NBA and the EuroLeague more, for most part. But the way that they played at Alabama was a way that I loved. It was an NBA style of play, play I felt comfortable with. It was a situation I felt I could recruit players to, and then he was a human being I felt I could recruit players to, and human being I felt I could work with and work for. But I took the job, and I was very open with him because I interviewed for some Division I head coaching jobs. I just didn't have college coaching experience, and I told him, I was like, I'm taking this job. I want to be very upfront with the goal in mind to be a Division I head coach. That is why I'm coming. And obviously, they'd lost all 3 assistants. And this is why Nate Oates is the best. And he said, I'm having you come here with the goal to make you a head coach. That is my goal for you. I'm going to do that. We're going to win. I'm going to show you what it takes to win at the college level, and then you will be a head coach. So that was the reason why I came to college, was for this opportunity that I have now.
It's been quite a journey for you, and you give a lot of credit to Coach Hodson as well. Just in the past couple of weeks, how's he helped you get acclimated here?
He's given me the lay of land. He texted me this morning, you know, about a Montessori school. Let me connect you with this guy. Let me help you here. It is really important to Coach Hodson that he put a lot of time and effort into this program, and his staff did, and they did a great job building it. He wants it to continue to have success. You know, like we were talking, I was driving to go look at houses, and, you know, he made the statement. He's like, Ryan, the people in that community are the salt of the earth. That is who they are. That is who you get to be with every day. And he's helping me with staff members. He recommended one of the assistants we hired, Hayden Sauer. I didn't know him at all. I'd never talked to him, didn't know him. Brian was like, listen, you guys know Brian. And he's like, Hayden Sauer's gave me his like name, hire him, don't mess this up. But he's constantly connecting me to people. He's giving me advice, how to build relationships with specific people, how to handle this situation. This is how they did the scheduling. He's really been incredibly helpful to myself and our staff because he's constantly communicating with Hayden about what do we need to do here to keep it rolling and how do we need to get it done. And obviously, he had to learn along the way to where he's helping me kind of miss some of those road bumps. He's been incredibly helpful.
You mentioned Coach Sauer's your first hire. When you start looking at sort of what people are saying about him, he was regarded as one of the best young up-and-coming recruiters in college basketball.
Yes, he is. And didn't know him, never talked to him. And most people, when they make a hire, they only want to hire people that they know. The reason behind that is loyalty. Like, they want to know people they're working with have their back. And I'm more of amongst the belief that loyalty is a character trait. You either are a loyal person or you're not. You're either a hard worker or you're not. You're either a good person or you're not. And an example, right, like Jeff Purington didn't know me. He didn't know me at all. Now, it was recommended to him by people that he knew, so he felt more comfortable. But he didn't know me, and he gave me a chance. And I didn't need to know Hayden. Brian had recommended him at the highest level. I know he wants his place to win. And then I called a bunch of friends about him, and everyone said the same thing. Great human being, elite worker, great recruiter, really good coach. You know, it's not easy to go to the Final Four. And Hudson said, I believe they were the Elite Eight the year before. You know, and like he's worked his way up to where he is, and he's put in a lot of sweat equity. So it was a no-brainer. And let me tell you, man, I had to give him a big hug last night because, like, I'm just so glad he's here. He's been a huge help, and he's working his tail off.
All right, just another minute or two left with you here, Coach, as we wrap it up. I know the question you're getting from a lot of people right now is just how this roster is starting to form. And it's a process, but kind of take us through these next few days and weeks as you try to put a team together.
Well, I mean, we're obviously meeting with the current players that are here, trying to retain some. Some are going to go off to better opportunities. Some are going with coach. Some are going to have better financial offers within the portal for what we can realistically play. And, I mean, that's the state of college basketball. And then we're actively recruiting Division I transfers, Division II transfers, junior college kids and high school kids. We've had a bunch of Zooms set up. We got a Zoom today, and we've got some kids lined up to come in on visits that we believe are talented young men. So we're building it. We're going to have to add a bunch of new players, which is going to take time to make sure we get the right person, the right human being, the right player that fits how we want to play. We're working towards it. We're making headway. We're making progress with it, which is really, you know, it's like every day that happens, that you're having the conversation, Zoom, kid wants to come on a visit, you're feeling, all right, we're moving in the right direction.
Coach, it's great to have you here. We know there's a lot more to get to with your story, and look forward to hearing more of it as we go ahead in the coming months here.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
First National Bank's roots run deep in Northeast Arkansas. We began a single Paragould branch with one idea: customers first. By focusing on the best products banking has to offer and valuing the highest level of service, we're now 23 branches across Arkansas and Tennessee. As First National Bank grows, our roots only get deeper, and the mission remains the same: you first, always. Learn more about our products and services at fnbank.net. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Red Wolves fans, this is Coach Destiny Rogers, and I'm asking you to help our student athletes by donating to the Impact Club. This is an organization that highlights our commitment to teamwork while raising awareness and support for our local community programs. Make a monthly commitment and get access to team letters, special gear, and exclusive access that you won't find anywhere else. Find out more and give today at impactclub.com. That's Impact spelled I-M-P-A-C-K-T club.com. Your support makes a real difference in the lives of our student athletes and in the future of our sports program.
Wrapping things up here on the Second to None podcast, presented by First National Bank and by Cavanaugh Auto Group. You can check out Cavanaugh's entire selection of new and pre-owned vehicles at CavanaughCars.com. Baseball. They fell to UCA last Tuesday night, 3-2. It was a game in which we saw a lot of good pitching against a UCA team that the Red Wolves had run ruled in Conway the week before, and crowd was great, man. It was
a great night
to be out there. We had a season-high crowd, nearly 1,100 on hand. And
big shout-out before, just to that point, alumni had Bark at the Park that night. Yeah. Student Activities Board had their day at the park, so big student turnout that night. So, yeah, fun crowd.
That was awesome. And they were giving away these
good
custom
stuff.
Jerseys they had made. And a good hour before first pitch, I started to see students come in, and by the time we were about 30 minutes out, I mean, there were well over 100 students that had gathered and were in line to try to get one of those jerseys. They were cooking out. It was just a really cool scene, and those students stuck around for most, if not all, of the game. So it was a great atmosphere. Bases loaded with one out in the bottom of the ninth,
right,
and ended up hitting into a double play to end the game.
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now, I mean, I don't mind telling you that the game ended on a double play that we had spent on the TV broadcast. We'd spent the last few seconds saying that double play couldn't be turned. And I'll give credit. They turned it. Like, well, we were sitting here talking through the situation where you're going to replay your middle infield back, because this could be a really, really hard double play to turn right here. I don't know if you can get it unless something's hit hard right at you. And to their credit, and I know it took a review, that it was really going to come down to whatever call was made on the field was going to stand. And, yeah, tip your hat to them. They turned a double play that was going to be really hard to pull off.
It was a challenging weekend. A-State knew that going in to the weekend as they traveled to Coastal Carolina to take on the 21st-ranked team in the nation, a Coastal team that was ranked in the top five in the RPI. And, you know, one big reason is they've got a really, really, really good pitching staff that's tops in the Sun Belt. They were seventh nationally entering the weekend and earned run average. So you knew that they had just a phenomenal pitching staff. But you know what? So do we.
Yeah, there were two good pitching staffs.
I mean, they're the top two pitching staffs in the Sun Belt right now. A-State and Coastal Carolina are the top two pitching staffs in the league. And I'll tell you right now, at the end of the weekend, the Red Wolves were top 20 in the country in earned run average. In fact, they're 17th in the nation. Just amazing. And such
a big
reason.
Yeah, I'm sitting here shaking my head.
Such a big reason for it is we're just not allowing free bases. Top 10 in the country in walks allowed per nine innings. I'll tell you, I enjoy making that trip to Coastal. It's such a great atmosphere, great ballpark. I love the trip. But, man, I love the baseball. That was a fun series for me to call, fun series to watch. There were a total of 12 runs scored between the two teams over 3 days. It was really well played. We'll start with Friday. You know, we're facing a kid named Jacob Morrison, who has a sub-2 ERA, leading the league in earned run average. He's now 6-0 on the season. But I thought Gavin Galley was really, really good in his first start. He's been so good. You've seen him out of the bullpen, just how good he's been. And I thought Gavin was great. He gave us 4 1/3, but Coastal wins the game 4-1. And I interviewed Coach Silva after the game, and he was really encouraged. And that includes the offense, because we only struck out 3 times. We're still hitting a lot of balls hard. And Kaysen Campbell homered in the final inning. It seemed like that was a big boost for him. We talked about Kaysen last week because he was really good in the ULM series, but he went 5-for-10 in that series this weekend against Coastal. You lose 4-1 on Friday, then you're right there again on Saturday.
Right, in a dogfight.
We had runners on base in 8 of the 9 innings and just couldn't string hits.
It's 1-1 in at least the 6th, or was it still 1-1 in the 7th?
Well, we were scoreless going into the bottom of the 5th. And, yeah, it was 1-1. And Coastal ended up scoring 1 run in 4 consecutive innings, the 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th. Yeah, had chances to win that game. And Jella Vanderlei was very good. He went the first 4 1/3 in that game. But even when we got off the air on Saturday, Coach Silva looks at me and says, "Look, I know we're right there, but I'm tired of being right there."
I'll tell you.
It's time to win one of these.
Listen, I don't like to lose at anything, but if you have to lose a baseball game, that makes Mike Silva's post-game interview destination radio. Because you want to know exactly. He's great, and he's so transparent. It's like he can't be anything but honest. Like, I love, even after the UCA game, I mean, like, he basically said, like, if I'm in our pitching staff, I'm really mad at our offense right now, because like, we're keeping us in every game here. And but just, I love it, man. He's so straightforward and honest, and he wasn't wrong. We're right there and got there Sunday.
Let's talk about Sunday, because we were right on the precipice, largely due to the pitching that we had through the first 2 games.
And the defense. Shout out to the defense.
Defense was really good, too. I'm glad you mentioned that. But, man, we keep talking about this freshman named Jack Hibbard, who's already thrown 2 complete games this year. And I was anxious to see how he'd perform in this environment. You got 3,000-plus fans, one of the most beautiful stadiums in college baseball, one of the best teams in college baseball. And he was nothing short of phenomenal. He had a no-hitter going with 2 outs in the bottom of the 6th. It ended up being broken up at that point, but Jack goes 7 innings, and he gave up just 2 hits. You talk about a freshman meeting the moment. He did it. And I want to talk about another freshman, a redshirt freshman, Ashton Quiller. Number one, he's playing some really good center field for us. He made an amazing catch in the bottom of the 8th inning, which he made look easy, where he had to cover a whole lot of ground and make the catch in right center.
That's the thing. You make a very good point, is that sometimes he's his own worst enemy into how good he's playing center field, because he makes really good catches look easy because he's so freaking fast.
Coach Silva moved him into the leadoff spot this weekend. He's been hitting down primarily in the 9 hole. But Coach Silva wanted Will French to be in situations where he came up with runners on base. And Ashton delivered a 2-out RBI double to put us up 1-0. It stayed 1-0 all the way until the 8th inning. Will French had a 1-out double in the 8th, and then he later scored on a wild pitch to make it 2-0. And it was good to get the insurance run, but hey, after Hibbard left, we had Chase Richter coming in. He hadn't thrown in the first two games.
Oh, me.
He gets the two-inning save. He was magnificent. Go on to win it 2-0. Just a magnificent win. And it was just the third time Coastal had lost all season at home. They're 14-3 at home now. But a good way to wrap up that weekend. And Coach Silva said, walking out of the booth, he said, I would have paid a lot of money for that win.
Yeah, it just because, man, I mean, nothing would have been honestly worse than to go over there, compete your butt off, and get swept.
Yeah.
And I know, did you drop the series? Yeah, but it's just so different feeling getting out there with a win versus going out of there playing good and getting swept.
And we played good all three games. Some really good things to take out of that series and great to finish it off with a win. And hey, A-State's now 5-7 in league play. If the tournament started today, they'd be in. They're in a tie for ninth right now in the Sun Belt standing. So you and I have talked about it. Coach Silva and I have talked about it. With the pitching the way it is, if the Red Wolves make the tournament,
oh gosh,
nobody wants to face this team.
No, I mean, if the way they're pitching, and that's just, I was telling somebody the other day, is just that there's no guy they can put out there where it's like, oh man, it's the white flag.
Yeah.
Every guy they tried out there, you think is about to get dudes out.
Yeah, it's getting fun. And I think a win like that gives them a lot of confidence. Now, Tuesday night, they face the number one team in the country. They go over to Fayetteville to take on Arkansas. And then another big Sun Belt series this weekend as they take on South Alabama. And South got off to a slow start, but they took 2 out of 3 this weekend from Georgia Southern. And that's a big series for both teams.
Yep.
First pitch Friday at 6, Saturday at 6, Sunday at 1.
And it sounds crazy to say, but right? I mean, we're down to 9 chances to see this bunch play on Slayton Family Field. 3 conference weekends are all that's left. So don't let this one get you by.
All right, let's talk bowling. They were in Pittsburgh this past weekend competing in their 17th consecutive NCAA tournament. This was the regionals, and they ended up falling to Maryville in an elimination match on Saturday. Another great season, though, for Coach Kostic and his team. They finished 80-41. That was their final record.
Sent Nebraska home, I think, along the way, right? Won an elimination game on Friday to get into Saturday and get to Maryville. But, yeah, a down year, they'd probably tell you. They'd probably tell you they had a down year where they went to the regional and won a match, and they're not going into the Final Four, and it's a huge disappointment. And I've said that's so tongue-in-cheek, but that's just – that's the level they've established.
Yeah, they have set the bar extremely high
with
that bowling program. And, you know, the credit goes to everybody that's been a part of it, but Coach Kostic has done just such a phenomenal job raising the bar to where it's at right now. Track and field. First off, early last week, Jacob Pyatt and Bradley Gelmert were named Sun Belt Conference Outdoor Athletes of the Week. Well deserved after their performances the weekend before. But then they competed this past weekend. The team did at the Joe Walker Invite in Oxford. And some great performances. Cameron Bailey moved into the top 10 in school history in the 100 meters. Menachem Chen finished runner up in the shot put. And he moved into 7th in school history in that event. Track and field going to compete this weekend at the Crimson Tide Invitational in Tuscaloosa. How about the golf teams? Men's golf, another solid week for them. They finished 6th out of 23 teams at the Cowboy Classic in Maricopa, Arizona. Jake Wallace finishing tied for 4th individually in that event. He was named Sunbelt Golfer of the Week. And now the men getting ready to host the A-State Spring Invitational next Monday and Tuesday, the 14th and 15th, at Ridgepoint.
First time they've played two home tournaments at Ridgepoint. You know, you got the Bubba Barnett in the fall. Now they've added a spring event there. That's a course they usually fare
really
pretty well on. Yeah, back-to-back golfers of the week. So they're rounding in the form with the conference championship not too far away.
Yeah, this is the final tune-up, this A-State Invitational before the conference tournament. So a big week ahead for Coach Hagan's team. And as we record this, the women's golf team is competing at the Brickyard Collegiate in Macon, Georgia. And after the first round, they were fourth out of 10 teams.
And led in the first round by Caroline Hughes, the true freshman out of Jonesboro High School. So glad to see her jump up and have a really good first round.
Do want to mention the tennis team dropped their matches at Troy and Georgia State over the weekend. They're now 11-9 on the season, 4-5 in league play, and their final home match of the season will be this Saturday, 10 a.m. is when it will begin against Southern Miss.
And it's their family fun fest. There's going to be a lot of stuff going on, stuff for the kids, free T-shirts, a big presence for international students also going to be out there. So it actually will be quite a scene. I don't know if we've ever really talked much about this, but you should come check out the tennis match on Saturday, because even these matches they've dropped, they've all been competitive. They've made so many strides. It's their last chance to play at home. A lot of stuff happening. They're just like the rest of our athletes. They feed off the energy being at home. So hopefully get some folks out there and cheer them on.
Anything else we need to discuss here?
Well, you know, depending on when you're listening, Tuesday, as we're sitting here, not just the day A-State's at Arkansas in baseball, but it's also Day of Giving across the A-State campus. A lot of that's being driven toward, you know, this one pack initiative. If you're listening, hey, heck, it's not like you can only give on Tuesday. If you're listening, it's after Tuesday. Feel free to give anyway. But, yeah, big thanks in advance to everybody who takes part in that. I think you'll start seeing that terminology, that one-pack terminology, showing up more often, because that's the deal. It's what we got going on here, is that even just from an athletic standpoint, you know, there are a lot of challenges. And it's always taken a lot of money, but now it's taken even more with different things you didn't know were coming. House settlement and this thing and that thing. So it takes more than ever to do this and stay afloat. So we're kind of all in this deal together.
Hey, thanks to Coach Pannone coming in. Really enjoyed our conversation. And I know we had a little bit of a smaller window today. We could probably talk hours with that dude about all his experiences and everything he's seen.
Yeah, I think hopefully it may be great in the summer. Like, you know, get a staff hired and a roster signed. It would be good to sit him down there and just honestly tell a story about every stop, and we'll go an hour before you know what happened.
Thanks to Caleb Garner helping set up that interview for us. Always appreciate you listening, and we hope you join us again next week for our next edition of the Second to None podcast, presented by Cavanaugh Auto Group and by First National Bank.